The old proverb says, blood is thicker than water. But then again, that was before they discovered warfarin. Hello and welcome to this week's Urgent Bite, brought to you by the Royal New Zealand College of Urgent Care. My name is Guy Melrose, and today we highlight a recommendation from a previous prescriber update. An abiding memory of my house officer year was the grind of prescribing the daily warfarin dose. Looking at the recent trends in INR, any recent treatments or changes in condition that might affect things, and looking for any red flags or bleeding issues before choosing a value to prescribe. While there were charts to follow and guidelines, it still felt a bit hit and miss at times. But there's no doubt that warfarin is a life-saving drug. Now, a common comment patients would often make when discussing warfarinization would be, oh, that's rat poison. This is a comment, while I knew to be true, I'd never given actual thought to. So a quick read of Wikipedia revealed to me the origins of warfarin. In the 1920s, cattle were hemorrhaging, often spontaneously, in parts of the USA and Canada, and some were dying after minor procedures like castration. It was determined that a silage made from sweet clover that had gone mouldy was the suspect. Work began on identifying the agent within this silage, and it was eventually identified to be a compound named dicumarol, a product of coumarin, which is responsible for the sweet smell that you get from cut grass. A fungus metabolizes the coumarin into the anticoagulant that they then named dicumarol. Further work was done to produce this anticoagulant, and it was developed into a rodenticide, which was given the name warfarin. It was so named because it was developed at the Wisconsin Alumni Research Foundation, and it was also a coumarin. So put the two together, and you get warfarin. An intentional overdose in a human, who subsequently survived, led to studies into a human version, and it became the anticoagulant that we all know in the 1950s, with Dwight Eisenhower being among the early recipients. Warfarin's role in interfering with vitamin K metabolism was demonstrated in 1978. The daily chore of completing warfarin charts is not something that junior doctors have to deal with as much nowadays, with the development of direct oral anticoagulants. Direct factor XA inhibitors like rivaroxaban now make anticoagulation no longer reliant on INR monitoring and variable dosing, but the indications for use remain the same. In urgent care, we commence patients on anticoagulation, most commonly for deep venous thromboses. There are established pathways for investigating suspected DVTs and commencing treatment, so while GPs might be continuing the ongoing management, we will be having the discussion around commencing. As with any medicine, starting a drug requires balancing risks and benefits and must look for contraindications and interactions. So one of the articles in the December 2023 prescriber update from MedSafe here in New Zealand provided a good reminder for those of us who prescribe anticoagulants. MedSafe had issued a monitoring communication in August of 2022 through to February of 2023 to gather information on abnormal uterine bleeding with oral anticoagulants. Following this feedback, they released this update to advise that when starting oral anticoagulant therapy, new or worsening abnormal uterine bleeding may occur. Postmenopausal women and those with a history of abnormal uterine bleeding may be at higher risk. So in discussing starting oral anticoagulation with your patients, it is necessary to ask about any history of abnormal uterine bleeding, including fibroids and endometriosis. And then we should be counselling that new or worsening abnormal uterine bleeding might occur. Ensuring follow-up is encouraged if this does happen is important, and this is in addition to the other risk assessments we make in deciding to prescribe an anticoagulant. I've linked in the show notes to the prescriber update so you can review their full article. And I've also linked to a 2022 paper from the journal Blood by De Jong et al., titled Incidence and Impact of Oral Anticoagulation-Associated Abnormal Menstrual Bleeding in Women After Venous Thromboembolism, which is also worth reading. They found that 60% of the women who did not have abnormal uterine bleeding before venous thromboembolism diagnosis experienced it once they'd started anticoagulation. Now, if you have any comments, questions, suggestions, or corrections, email podcast@rnzcuc.org.nz. And we'll be back again next week with another podcast. I look forward to seeing you all then. But for now, thanks for listening.